You're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast with your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Inside the Mix podcast. Now, this is another Synth Pals virtual party, but it has been renamed to the Synth Pals virtual pub in this instance. What being British as I am, I thought it'd be quite apt to bring in the pub notion. So I've got five individuals with me today, five producers, artists. So I'm just going to say a big hello to everyone. Just go around the room. So first we've got Aisle 9. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much. And then we have,
how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. And then we've got Neon Highway.
Hi guys,
lovely stuff. And then we've got Ghost Georgie.
Hey.
Torta.
Hiya.
Hello. And then we've got Carmen Noodles.
Hello.
Yes, so I said off air I'm going to come back to that name. So this is the second episode of this. Now, the first one turned out to be relatively popular, hence why we're doing this again. And for the audience listening, if you've never actually listened to an episode of the Inside the Mix podcast, first of all, I'll say why not or why. And also, this episode is basically just, we're just talking about music, essentially. So the idea was to come to this with a question that you would put forward to the rest of the group, and we just come up with some ideas and sort of go from there. So, off air, Carl, Neon Highway, kindly agreed to go first with his question. So, I'll proverbially open it up to the forum, of which it is Carl. Go ahead, what is your question?
So, I guess I was thinking about, I see a lot of artists talk about their influences in the synth wave scene. And a lot of people tend to go with modern artists. You know, a lot of people say The Midnight, FM84, Essinger, those types of guys. And you don't see a lot of people, given our scene as retro, you don't see a lot of people harking back to the 80s and going, oh, the Cars and, you know, whoever else it may be in the 80s, but it always tends to be modern. So I guess the question is, do we see our influences more as modern retro wave artists, or do a lot of us go back to those originals?
That's a really good question, actually, because it's a question I always ask artists right at the beginning of interviews, like what influenced them growing up, what influenced them way back when. And admittedly, I think when I'm writing music, if I probably look through the reference bank of artists that I have, predominantly modern artists, except if I'm doing like the dance music side of things, then it goes back to the 90s. But in saying that, like yesterday, I bought myself a Sisters of Mercy's vinyl,
nice,
which I cannot wait to get to grips with. So there is an element of me that wants to channel the older influences, but I seem to always just gravitate to the, I don't know why it is. I don't know. What's everyone else's thoughts? Anybody got a thought on that one?
Well, I know that Neon Highway, I know that both of us will cite our sort of love of things like Joy Division and New Order and, like, you know, I mean, quite. I've heard you talk quite a lot about, you know, older artists, and I do as well. I mean, I fear that that's just because I'm older and nothing to do with anything else. But, like, you know, I mean, I do sort of, I mean, a lot of the things that Kraftwerk and all these sorts of things, I do put them in my bio because they were probably the things that originally turned me onto liking synth-based music at all, because I hated synth-based music. I thought it was crap. And basically I was into rock and nothing else when I was sort of, you know, first started getting into music. And then somehow that changed, and it was a certain group of artists that changed my mind into that. And I think that's how I ever got into synthwave at all. I don't think I would have been producing synth-based music at the minute had at some point I not discovered that synth music or electronic music could be interesting, you know, next to just rock music, you know. So, yeah, they were definitely an influence on me. But I listen to loads of modern artists as well, so I don't know. But I would say that they probably influence my sound more than, like, any particular modern artist. But obviously, like, the kind of production style that we're in is a sort of hybrid. Most people aren't just making records that sound like the 80s. I mean, they are making records that are current and don't sound like anything else. They sound like now to me. I could be wrong, you know. It's probably eclectic mix of wherever you come from and whatever you've listened to. So I don't think it's just like, I don't think I sound like, people keep telling me Pet Shop Boys or something. And it was just interesting because they sort of say my voice reminds them of the Pet Shop Boys or something. And it's like interesting because I didn't really like the Pet Shop Boys. But like, you know, they're a seminal band and all that, but I just didn't really like them. I like West End Girls. I thought it was a great single, but you know, but it's funny, people will say that and then they go like, well, I did love New Order and I always thought the Pet Shop Boys were sort of ripped off New Order. So I guess I did. I sort of like Pet Shop Boys and Joy Division were probably a big influence on New Order, sort of influenced by New Order and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's weird. Like, it's a mixture of all these things. Yeah, that's my answer. Inconclusive as usual.
That's a great answer. Go around the room again. Has anybody got anybody else I'm thinking of, like, in terms of their influences? Do they hark more towards modern or is it older or maybe an amalgamation of the two?
For me, it's kind of both. I really love soundscapes. So anything that I feel like is a rich soundscape, for me, keyboards are just my thing. It's just my dominant instrument. Like I studied piano music theory and stuff. And so like piano was just kind of where writing music started for me. And so I it's not specifically so much the 80s, but it's like anything that I feel like has really rich layers. Like for instance, even like 70s Frank Zappa, when he was first starting to do like a lot of polysynths and stuff like that. Like that's very influential to me. Like when I started working on the Halloween 77, like I assisted on that box set, it was just incredible hearing like all the different tracks. And I really love those vintage tones. So there's so many layers and there's so much like going on. So that just kind of is the main thing kind of that inspires me, whether it's, you know, obviously this isn't specifically synthwave, it's dream pop, but like whether it's Beach House, whether it's Washed Out, like on the modern end, or something like Zappa, because he, you know, was a composer first and foremost. So there are so many layers. And every time you listen, you can hear something new. So that's kind of what inspires me the most.
Weasels Rips My Flesh was a favourite of mine from Zappa. So there we go.
Nice.
Ever heard that? Weasels Rip My Flesh by Zappa? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great album.
Yep.
A very weird cover.
I've never given Zappa enough time, you know. I had a friend, I was in a band a few years back, and he would bang on about Zappa all the time. Ultimately, he left the band for various reasons. But maybe that's why.
It's not easy music, is what I'd say.
But I've heard it's very, very influential.
Yeah, it's great. Great stuff.
Yeah. What about yourself, though, sir? I'm going around the room now. What about influences from your music?
I always feel shit when people ask me about influences because I'm so bad at what I listen to. I mainly listen to a lot of hip hop, to be fair. But I have this large or insane love of 80s aesthetics. And I kind of honestly fell into going at all towards the synthwave genre through vaporwave art. I got so obsessed with the art the same way that I would get obsessed with, oh, what a cliche, she loves Blade Runner, but everyone's shocked and appalled. But you know, the visual together with the soundscape and the music of it, there's something to that retro, futuristic, extremely nostalgic and extremely dramatic vibe, both visually and through the music of it, that I was extremely drawn to. And then I think it's kind of, it's funny how you said you had a background in classical piano, right, Georgie? Because I have the same upbringing. My mother was a pianist and I've always played the piano. And then I fell into playing the drums instead. And then like everyone who produces music, apparently I played in a punk band because that's what you do first before you start making beats. I can't honestly say that I keep up with modern artists that much. I think I pull a lot from movie soundtracks, from the movies I would watch as a kid, and just 80s bangers. And also, I have a background in musical theatre, of all things, and it's, again, the kind of extreme over-the-top drama. It just lends itself to the kind of 80s nostalgia vibe. which I never knew that I would love creating, but I absolutely just fell in love with. And so it's not specific artists as such, but I would say I lean definitely more towards actually 80s material rather than modern artists. But I think that's because I didn't know a lot about synthwave until I started making it. So now through this community, I'll go check out people's Instagrams and drop a follow, see what they're producing, and get really, really inspired. But I think as well, I feel almost as if I'm coming at a side angle into the synthwave genre because I focus so heavily on the vocals as well, writing big vocals rather than writing really cool tracks. That's just because I'm not a good enough producer yet to write really cool tracks. But I get really inspired by people who can make instrumental tracks that are extremely, still dramatic and have a curve and a dynamic. That's impressive.
Yeah, I think that whole aesthetics comment is one that's prevalent for all the interviews I do. In particular, that it's quite interesting, like with that 80s aesthetic. And probably not just the 80s. There is, like, if you look at the 90s and every other genre, but you can almost be influenced by the visuals before you even start writing music, which is the coolest thing about it. But what you mentioned there about not knowing synthwave before you started writing it is actually a conversation I had with the guys from Year of the Fool, which was a couple of weeks ago, I think it came out, that episode. And they said the same. They started writing music and then they didn't actually know what it was until they started listening to other music. And then they found it quite liberating because they didn't follow a formula per se, which is and always an interesting concept and conversation. But no, I totally agree with the visuals impacting the music. The fact that I've got a neon light on here behind me, it's pretty much a testament to that. And this really, really garish light in the corner, which is really annoying. But the actual lights in the roof don't work. I need to get those fixed.
It's incredible how I can come at it from such an a genuinely like original point of view and still end up, in my case, making very unoriginal music. That sounds a lot like a lot of my friends' music, you know.
Yeah, it's quite cool though that you've predominantly sort of like that hip hop influence, because I think it's yourself, and this is testing my memory, I think it's Herman from the Future Kids who is a big hip hop lover. But as you mentioned previously, it's, and I think you said there as well, the folk band. The punk band. I was thinking of Opeth then. That's another conversation, isn't it? The whole Opeth one. That was amazing. Well, maybe we'll come on to that a bit later. But yeah, and how we've all come from this band sort of direction, which is amazing. I'll go around the room again, so Karma Noodles, but first things first, where's that name come from? That was the first thing I said.
Yeah, that's quite a...
Is it safe for the podcast?
Before? Oh, definitely, definitely.
Oh, that's all right then.
It's a lot less interesting than it might, than it seems. Basically, I'm a massive video game geek, so I was sort of looking around video game titles to try and figure out, okay, I originally knew I wanted to do something that was sort of infused with, in the same way that synthwave is very 80s nostalgia. I was like, okay, I want to try and tie myself to something with video games because that's what I'm crazy about, aside from music. And there's a Zelda game in particular that I'm very crazy about called Majora's Mask.
Yes.
And the Japanese title of that game has the word Kamen in it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That sounds cool. So I was like, okay, that. And then obviously there's quite a famous anime that's also got Kamen in it. So I was like, I can't just be Kamen. It's like Kamen kind of sounds like ramen.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that it is a pun. I love a pun. I'm a sucker for a pun. And originally it was just supposed to be like, yeah, it's supposed to be like little guitar bits, bits and pieces. So it's like, yeah, I'm a classic serial noodler. So that's sort of the merging of those two is where the name come from.
I get it now, and I realize is it how do you pronounce it? Is it
because it's supposed to be Carmen, yeah, like ramen, but with the.
I thought I was being incredibly British and saying carbon, like it's a posh English accent, and then getting it totally wrong. But so go around influences again, mate. I know you're sort of. You've sent me stuff, and it's you've got that synth music direction sort of thing, but you've also got the game. So, would you say you're heavily influenced then by like I haven't heard chiptune. Do you do chiptune?
I have tried drastically to try and incorporate a lot of chiptune stuff into it, but it's like using the authentic way that they program it. It's completely rewiring your brain.
Really?
To relearn, like, yeah, different. You have to use tracker software, which is like you have to like write in notes on like a scroll bar, and then it scrolls. Mm. It can be quite.
Oh God.
Yeah. Right. For another time.
Yeah.
I definitely incorporate a lot of video games since. But yeah, it was quite interesting, especially I think soundscapes, especially with I think it was Georgie that mentioned about soundscapes, which is ironic. but I would agree. I'm very much like soundscapes. I would say is very much my influence, and then just the love of hip hop, sort of over that, and trying to mesh those two worlds together.
We'll be right back.
Are you facing a common hurdle in your music journey? If mastering feels like an enigma, trust me, you're not alone. Whether you're an independent artist or a music producer, the struggle with unbalanced masters that just won't translate across various devices and environments is all too familiar. Ever found yourself puzzled, wondering, why don't my masters match my references? Perhaps you've delved into countless hours attempting the DIY route, only to find the end results unsatisfactory. Maybe you've experimented with numerous silver bullet plugins or even AI solutions, but the desired outcome still eludes you. Or maybe you're currently collaborating with an engineer and yearn for something fresh and different. That's precisely where I step in. At Synth Music Mastering, I'm offering a special opportunity, a one-time free test master available for a limited time. Picture elevating your music with my unwavering dedication to quality and a welcoming, personalized approach that you just don't get with a big mastering studio. What's even better? It's entirely free. All you need to do is submit a finished mix. It's a no-brainer, right? So seize the chance now to get your free test master. Simply click the link provided in the episode description or head over to Synth Music Mastering. Mastering.com.
Yeah, there we go. Another hip hop one. That track, this is a total tangent. Now, that track you sent me recently, did that have any hip hop elements in it? The one that I listened to?
I'm trying to. No, so that was a synth wave. that's yet to come. But that's more of a quite a synth wave sort of vibe. But,
yeah. I was experimenting with Trapwave recently, but I got Trapwave. Yeah. It sounded quite good. At the beginning, I put in this, I went with Foley sounds. As you know, George, I'm a big fan of our Foley days. And I got this whole Foley sequence at the beginning, and it sounds incredible. But the rest of the song I'm not sold on. But because the intro is so good, I might run with it. But anyway, yeah, excellent stuff. So, I'm well aware of time, and this time can really get away from you on these things, because we're already sort of like almost a half an hour in. So next, moving on to another question. Does anybody else wanted to put a question to the forum before I probably choose one of George's here? I've got them up in front of me.
I was going to ask a question, which was, firstly, out of any of us, do any of us have merchandise? Have we sort of gone into the merchandise thing? And secondly, you know, sort of coming on from that, at what point do you go into that? You know, what point do you feel it's justified to move out of just going like, well, you know, who wants to buy merch off me? You know, should I make merch? Or am I just going to be selling it to my gran? You know, who wants it? And so, you know, and also, I suppose finally on that would be, if you are into it or going into it, how are you going to fulfill it? How are you going to do it? Are you planning on doing it through sort of like someone who fulfills it online, or are you going to get them printed? And just, I'm just, merch in general is a question, a whole topic that I'm interested in, and sort of to see how many of us are getting into that, because I'm told that pretty much it's the way forward in terms of making some revenue back from your music eventually is to do merch, because no one pays for music. That's apparently the basics of it.
I think that's a fantastic question, Tim, with merch, because I've been toying with the idea of like podcast related merch, and in particular I was thinking stickers thank you for the support. Stickers or something along those lines, or T-shirts. I was going to roll up with something like a monthly giveaway or something. So, but much like you said then, I was
can I have a mug?
At what stage?
I'd like
I'm
a
have
mug.
Mugs. Yeah. I might
a podcast mug would be really cool.
Stein as well. Steins would be quite cool. Something along those lines. But I remember being in a band years ago and we had merch and we probably released an EP and then we're like, oh, we'll go out and buy loads of merch. And we got lumbered with 500 CDs that we never sold and a load of T-shirts that we ended up throwing into the crowd, of which there were about 10, and it would just be on the floor. But no, I don't know what the answer is to that, at what point you do it, because I've seen a few artists now. I know Pensacola Mist, who I had on the podcast a few weeks back, they've just released some stickers, and the stickers look insane. They look so good. But I don't know at what point did you have to wait? I don't think followers, like if you look at your social media following, I don't necessarily know if that's a metric to use, because I don't know how many of them would... I don't know what the engagement would be on that. I don't know what anyone else has thought. Yeah, back to the first question then. Has anybody got merch?
I have stickers and CDs. Like the stickers, I pretty much just give them away. Like I do giveaways regularly. And I'll just say, does anybody in this region want a sticker? Like and comment. I usually do it on Twitter. And then people will participate. And then I'll just send them stickers. And I'll send them a little letter and a sticker. And people just enjoy it, you know. And they're cool. They're holographic. So I just kind of give those away. I haven't sold any, but people do really enjoy them. And then I have CDs. I haven't sold that many of them, and I have given a lot of them away. But it's just kind of good to have as an option. You know, I did a limited run of them because I knew I wasn't going to sell a ton of them. It was the debut EP, and, you know, I don't have a massive fan base at this point, so you know, but just have something available, and I have it just up on Bandcamp, so it's there if anybody wants it, and it's there, you know, if because I'm planning to start playing more in-person shows soon. I've only been doing like live streaming for a while, so you know, just to have it if people need it. Other than that, though, I haven't, but I think it's good to have something even to just give people, like a sticker, you know, something that's not too expensive, but just people enjoy that, I think.
I definitely think if you're playing live, having something tangible and being able to give away is fantastic. Definitely haven't been down that road. But I think if you're, because I know you perform live, Georgie, and Toto, you perform live as well, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, other George. Do you perform? Are you in a band at the moment? Are you performing live?
Sadly, not with this outfit, under this moniker. Yeah, it's a bit different with the kind of music I'm making anyway. To try and translate that to live is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole other kettle of fish. But it'd be interesting whether, if you're just a sort of like a studio producer, I think at what point you bring it in. Because I think if you're gigging, it's useful, as you say, to have something that you can hand out, like stickers. We used to have business, I don't know why we had business cards. We weren't really a business. But it probably just got used for roach paper, to be honest. Yeah, for the audience listening, that's what you put when you have a rolled up cigarette. I don't know if that translates to other countries at the beginning. Anyway, at what point you have it as a studio producer, in terms of what merchandise would you, if you were to get merchandise in, what would you go for first?
Well, you know, I mean this is the thing. I think, like, you don't want to avoid your garage being filled up with merch is my concept. So if you were to come up with a good design that can go on a T-shirt, on a mug or whatever, like T-shirts seem like T-shirts. You know, I might well buy a T-shirt, I guess. Other people might. I mean, like Cara and Zoe Lee seems to be doing well with their T-shirts. They seem to be everywhere. Everyone's wearing Cara and Zoe Lee T-shirt. So I think I might do that, but I think the way I would have to do it is through one of these kind of companies that sort of does it on demand, so that, you know, when somebody actually buys one, they make one and send one out, which obviously you get much less money per T-shirt. But then you don't have a garage full of them, and if nobody buys one, I assume you're not out of pocket. So that would be the sort of way of looking at it, I think. But I know that it's even in Spotify now that you can connect Spotify with a... I think it's through Shopify, isn't it, or something like that. They've got a way of connecting you now. And, like, you know, so it's coming to Spotify, I think, in a bigger way. I think we'll see it happen more and more, so that you can just be on Spotify listening to stuff and go, oh, I actually want to buy some merch off of this, and buy it through the app. And, of course, that would be a way that I can imagine lots of people doing it, you know, and they might just be listening to your music, like your music, and buy it. So, you know, guess that's what I'm looking at. So, but I'm not sure that I'm there at all for making it yet. But, you know, I don't want to jump the gun, but I'm thinking about it, you know. Neon Highway, buy one, I reckon.
I'd buy one as well, mate. I think you could test the waters.
Yeah, you'd buy one. I've got two. Georgie, anyone else? Yeah. No, I'm just, yeah, you know.
Test the waters then with the what do you say? It's on demand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would be the way to go. I think I might look into that at some point.
I was talking to Star Madman last week about this, and I think she uses Redbubble, which I've purchased loads of T-shirts off Redbubble, just things in the past, geek T-shirts, but I didn't know that they would do kind of custom stuff for artists, but she seems to do it that way, and it's on demand. It means that you've not got a garage full of merchandise there, so that's possible way forward. But again, like you said, Tim, you might not make that much money. You might end up with like £1.83 off each T-shirt you sell. But and I think also, if I think about more established artists that, you know, synth artists that have got tens of thousands of followers that I follow, and I don't even tend to buy merchandise a lot of them, so I'm kind of like, nobody's going to buy, my family won't even buy a T-shirt if I put one out. So I think for me, it's not a possibility at the moment, but it's a really good question about when do you pass that threshold and say it's time to start getting into that. I don't know.
Maybe I'll make tote bags. Everyone's got one of them.
Yeah. You know. they're crazy.
Put your shopping in an aisle 9 bag, you see? I mean, it makes sense. There's a supermarket connection there.
I think we've mentioned it last time. I think the last time we had a chat, I'd just been at the Nine Inch Nails gigs, and they were doing tote bags. It was like £35 for a Nine Inch Nails tote bag. And I was like, I can get a T-shirt for £30, or I can buy a bag to put it in for £35. It's just crazy prices for a tote bag. Absolutely.
That's mad. Considering what it is to make a tote bag.
Exactly.
I'm assuming it's just a press. They just press an image on into it. Yeah. Unless it's made out of like hemp or something along those lines. They've gone incredibly niche.
Yeah, maybe I'm just going to have to come up with something that other people don't try and sell as merch. Something unique, like, you know, I don't know, sort of
paint
Tupperware
or something.
By aisle 9 or something, you know. Something a bit different.
Aisle 9 beer.
Aisle 9 beer. Well, I've got a stunning beer tonight. This is the best of the West Country, I have to say. I'm not sponsored by them, but this is called Butt Cum. Yeah.
Gorham IPA. I know Buckham very well.
You don't pronounce it as coom when you're in the West Country.
No.
I was told this.
No,
I'd always said butt coom, being, you know, nicely brought up. But no, apparently coom is produced as cum. So it's butt cum. Yeah. Great.
Have you been to the brewery? It's near Bristol.
Bristol born, apparently. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's as you come to Bristol Airport, it's going to bore everyone now. Buckham is just before Bristol Airport. You'll see a sign for it. It's very nice, isn't it? It frequents many of the pubs down this way.
Yeah,
very good. For those transatlantic audience, if you're ever in the UK, seek it out. It's very good. I've got Birra Moretti, so I've gone slightly more international today. I was going to have a bottle of Bishop's Finger, but I went against it and got this one instead.
Oh, we could have had Butt Cum and Bishop's Finger. It would have been good.
A bit of Boris Lye PA.
That's fantastic.
It's a hazy, untransparent beer, much like its namesake.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't even know that existed. Imagine all those three in one, the Bishop's Finger, Butt Cum, and then Boris. It'd be quite an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get into sort of product placement here.
No, I'm still looking out more in search of that sponsorship. So who knows? The way the podcast is growing, it could happen, you know. It's growing quite nicely.
I'm not sure I'd want to be sponsored by Buckcom, actually. I think it could cause problems.
I don't know. To be fair, if they came knocking at my door, I wouldn't say no. Anyway, slight digression.
Lowered the tone.
Merchandise, wasn't it? Yeah, merchandise. Mm. Going back to what you said just now about Karen, it's Karen Zoe Lee, isn't it, the name? I always get the Zoe and the Lee around the wrong way. I do find, because I see so many of the T-shirts, though, part of my brain's like, oh, man, I want to get one of those T-shirts. I want to get one purely because I see it so much. However,
and they look
when
good.
I see... Yeah, yeah. But when I see a larger artist and you see like every man and his dog, let's say, with like a Metallica t-shirt, and then I'm just like, I'm indifferent. But maybe it's because I'm more inclined to support more independent, smaller
artists. An independent artist, yeah.
Yeah, who is quite proliferating.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's tricky, isn't it? You just basically got to get, go on, Carl.
I was just saying, it's good for the artists as well. You know, there's actually been quite a few artists I've discovered through KZL t-shirts. Like, because she'll repost it on her page. She's like, who's that? And I'll have a wee listen to them and go, they're absolutely brilliant. So it's cross-promotion. You know, it's this whole Synthwave community we talked about it last time. The networking, it's so invaluable, and it's brilliant, and the support that we give each other, that I think that's just another part of it. This whole sort of t-shirt promotion she's got on the go, it's fantastic.
If I were to do it personally as like a podcast, I suppose it's slightly different as an artist. I don't know if I'd create merch for my own name. I think that's very, very, as just Mark Matthews merch, I might be quite narcissistic of me. But I think if I'm the podcast, I think I would just give, my plan was to give it away. I was going to do like a monthly thing whereby somebody, if you share a post that I put out for the podcast, and then I'll do a like a tombola. Is it tombola? Yeah, it would be tombola. Something like that. And I'll pull a name out of a hat and then just fire them a free t-shirt. That's the thought process I was going to have, because obviously I'm not live on the road. If I was on the road, I'd just be throwing t-shirts out to a crowd. But it's a tricky one when you start doing that. When do you get merch? Maybe. I think the on-demand one is probably the way to start, I would say.
I think with you, Mark, you need to have that tagline on the t-shirt, big bold letters that says, if you're into synth music, you know, your intro that you do for the podcast. I'm Mark Matthews. If you're into synth music, booming in the logo.
I need to refresh that. I need to refresh that intro. Yeah.
It's so ingrained now, every time the podcast episode comes on, it's like, here we go. You know, it's like when you watch Star Wars and the 20th Century Fox comes up.
I think Carmen Noodles might have a problem. Because I think if you do t-shirts, Carmen, if you do t-shirts, I think you're going to get people trying to phone up an order. Like, they're going to want to, they're just going to want you to deliver them. Going to have some Carmen Noodles, please. You're going to have to start off a franchise. I think it could work in your favour. You never know. I almost want to eat some Carmen Noodles already tonight. So there we go.
That's an angle you could work, though. You could have like merchandise and then it's just like noodles, you know?
Yeah, as long as it didn't have my phone number on it.
Yeah,
no, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I think you were going to mention something about vinyl then.
Yeah, it's interesting that nobody really mentioned vinyl, because I've noticed, especially in like the synth community, like vinyl's like been quite massive, at least from what I've noticed. Most synth artists are, yeah, cassettes as well, yeah, definite. But I mean, yeah, it's a bit different, I guess, the t-shirts really.
Vinyl seems so expensive, like to print.
Yeah.
Is it?
It is. Yeah. You've got to put a lot of money out for it. Yeah.
For sure.
And you can't get it on demand. On you do have to, you have to put it up front to get them made. I'd love to get some vinyl done, but I feel like I'd have to have something justifiable to put on it. I don't feel like I've made something worthy of vinyl. And, it's a lot of money to put up. But I'd love to do it one day. Yeah. Because I'm a bit of a vinyl lover.
It'd be
lover.
Great, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I toyed with the idea of getting a lathe. I'd never used one before, but there are a few thousand, so I didn't. But no, I'd love to have a vinyl lathe and start cutting vinyl. There's a place, I think it's in Bristol actually, where they do that. And no, Taunton. I tell a lie. My hometown. You can get vinyl cut there. Loud Mastering. They've done some huge records in there, and for Sleepy Taunton, Madonna, massive, massive records. But
I'm
no, vinyl
a bit
is
sure about cassettes. Yeah, anyone else? I mean,
I've been the same.
But it's big, isn't it? People love it, but they're quite nice physical things, but, you know.
Do you think they listen to the cassette, though? Or is it just for a visual thing?
I could sell them without audio and see. I could just sell blank records and see if anyone listened to them as
blank
well.
Tapes.
I think we're talking about cassettes.
We'll be right back. If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Oh, yeah, no, just that, because I've been thinking about having something to sell after performing more live with this solo project, because I've also felt like nobody's going to buy it if that doesn't come and see me. But when I played live, people did ask for stuff. So I figured it'd be good to have a very tiny selection and just completely off the books, produce it myself and sell it there. And I didn't want to go vinyl because it can be a bit tough to sell, and they're pricey usually from when I've done it with bands. And it's different if you have the backing of a label, of course. But even with that, we would like at times almost struggle to break even though we had a decent following. So I figured as a solo artist on the scale that I'm working, it was just not reasonable. But I didn't want something that nobody could actually use. So I'm considering actually printing custom USB sticks with my songs on them, and perhaps an added bonus track of commentary or some such, but with like a cool retro looking logo. I figure it kind of fits into the vaporwave aesthetic as well if I make it look like a data chip in an old movie or something. That could be quite cool, but I can't seem to scrounge up the money to do it. I keep just recording new shit instead. But, you know, that's what I think is most fun. But eventually, I think that I might give that a try because I feel like it's something useful as well. Everybody loves a USB stick. It's kind of nice to have. But yeah.
I gigged with a band a few years back who did that. They had USB sticks. And they were the sticks in my mind. They were really popular, actually, and the USB sticks. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
It's cheap enough as well.
Reusable. Would you make it so they couldn't? I don't know. Would you make
no,
it so
of
they
course
couldn't?
Not. I'm like, this USB is only for my music. Yeah. No, the point is for it to be useful because I know that anybody can just listen to it on Spotify or YouTube.
I know some like, artists the who music's wouldn't out there for to free. Be used for anything else. Sorry.
Who would lock it
only
down.
Only what was it Buttcum promo?
Oh yeah. Get a Buttcum USB stick. I'd love it if they did that. I don't even know what you'd do
that
with.
Anyway. Yeah. Right.
there we go
terrible.
This is going to be on the explicit. I got to put the E on this one for this episode. Merch is an ongoing one. It'd be interesting to see what people do for merch going forward. I see a lot of it banded about. I think for me as a podcast, I think we go down mugs, get a mug,
syringes,
be a flagon. What was that? Sorry, Tim.
What?
Syringes. Sorry, it was a random comment.
I'm not entirely
Inject
sure.
Inject yourself that... with IL-9. No, sorry. No. I'm being. Very random, just ignore me. Yeah.
I'm not sure that
you should do like mouse pads.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
goes
yeah.
with the soundscapes that you make. That'd be
I'm being random, but I mean, like it's that sort of thing of thinking out the box, actually, is like, I wasn't being serious, but like, you know, just different things. Yeah. Like, I think the USB stick's a great idea. I think like something that, you know, isn't, you know, the norm, but is useful, as you say, is something that. Is just a bit different, but like hopefully doesn't cost you a fortune to produce, but you know, promotes you, and actually people might buy because they would like mouse pads, you know, all kinds of things, stationary
I
items.
Thought it could be cool, like if someone buys it and brings it to the next gig, they get the new songs for free on the USB stick. Like you could make a whole thing out of it.
Encouraging for that repeat customers.
Exactly. Show up to the gig. Like,
yeah, or you could do it whereby you could like give no, you can't really have half a USB stick. You can give half of something away here, and you have to come to the next gig and you get the other half or the other third. I don't know what that would be. You can't really give away half of you, or you give away the USB stick and you have to come to the next gig to get the encryption key for it to actually unencrypt the USB. I mean, that's a lot of commitment on their behalf.
That's pretty cool, though.
Selling faulty goods.
You just have a sort of like sort of treasure hunt going on where you got a clue each time. Eventually, you would finally, after buying all of these things, finally get to the end and get the prize. No, sorry.
It's like geocaching. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Geocaching, you could do that. You go, here's the first clue. It's on this USB stick. You can listen to the music at the same time as while you're solving this riddle. And then it'll take you on to the next thing. I mean, that's a lot of input on your behalf as an artist to come up with this whole elaborate sort of crystal maze scheme.
This is the whole question with merch, isn't it? Is whether it takes you away from the music, which is what really you want to make. And it's the question with artwork. It's lots of things you can get into in music. And they're telling us all the time that rather than just making music in order to make a living out of music or to fund your music or whatever, you need to do other things. And the trouble is, a lot of us as artists would say, like, what we want to make is music. We don't want to be sidetracked into doing all these other things. But sometimes I think they can be extensions of your creative process, extensions of your music, extensions of what you're trying to do. And then they become more interesting as an artist. If you think, oh, this kind of extends what I'm trying to do or say or communicate, then it's interesting, but you don't really want it to be like, oh no, I've got to produce all this stuff because if I don't produce this, I won't be able to make the next record or whatever. So, you know, I think that's the question.
I think it kind of reflects you. I think as an individual, as a creative as well, going back to what I said about geocaching and getting them to go down some sort of pathway where they solve these riddles and these various locations and stuff, it starts to reflect your own personality.
Yeah, yeah. Which could be good for some people, cash, but it could work.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's sort of, it's a breakaway from the usual merch, isn't it?
Let's take a quick break from this episode so that I can tell you about a free resource that I made for you. It's a PDF checklist that describes what you need to do to properly prepare a mix for mastering. So you've done the hard work and you love your mix. Yet suitably preparing a mix for mastering is often overlooked by musicians, resulting in delayed sessions, excessive back and forth conversation, and frustration on both parts. I want to help fix that. So if you want this free resource, just go to www.synthmusicmastering.com, as this checklist will help and guide you to make the mastering process as smooth, transparent, and exciting as possible. So again, the URL is www.synthmusicmastering.com for this free preparing a mix for mastering checklist. Let's get back to the episode.
I'm well aware of time, folks. We're 40 minutes in, so we've probably got enough time for one more question. Has anybody got a pressing question they would like to put to everyone else?
I think this one out of the ones I suggested, I think was the best. I was, what traps should novice producers be wary of? And basically, I've noticed, sort of obviously, I think all of you have been a novice at some time and you know, with there's so much information, so many tools available to new producers, that I think it's quite, you know, there are a lot of things sometimes you have to buy the ticket and sort of there's some things you have to be wary of, I think, as a new producer. And I, like, it's amazing, like on YouTube I've gotten so many like adverts for things that, like, if you just take a second to think about it with maybe a more of experienced head, you're like, do I really need this? Or there's a lot of quick fixes in the modern music production. So I was wondering if you all had encountered some of these and what you could maybe advise the audience against.
It's a good question, mate. Go on, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, you touched on it recently, Mark, and this is purely for me, it might work for somebody else, but we talked about these mastering kind of programs that are online, you know, like eMastern, or I can't remember what some of the other ones were. So if a novice producer is struggling, they've got their track, they've mixed it, but they just need to get the master done, and they're uploading it to this algorithm that's doing it for them, and it's spitting out a fairly decent master. But I did a trial of that once, and I thought it was okay, but Mark, I think we had a conversation about it, and we agreed that the best thing is your own ear, is your music, you know, you mastering it, or working with somebody collaboratively to get what is ultimately your end vision. But personally, an algorithm is something that I would stay away from. As a final sort of an ultimate solution there. You know, certainly as an interim to give you an idea or point you in the right direction, yeah, it might be a stepping stone, but I don't see that as a viable every time you produce a track, upload it to the algorithm and that's your master.
Yeah, I remember having that conversation with you about that. And it is, I think the key phrase you said there, I'll turn myself up a minute, is collaborating with someone if you're going to like outsource your music to them and working with them to sort of create your vision for your music. And interestingly, I just did an interview with an artist just before this and we were having that exact same discussion. So I asked him like, what advice would you give for someone who's looking for a mix or mastering engineer or a producer? And he said, someone who sits in your genre and also someone who you need to build that relationship, that working relationship with. It's an interesting one that I know, Georgie, you mix, you're an audio mm-hmm. engineer by trade, aren't yeah. you? What are your thoughts yeah. on that?
As far as just kind of like the algorithmic mastering pipeline thing or in general, just things to watch out for.
Let's start with the algorithm pipeline and then move on yeah. to the next
yeah,
one.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's really important to have that collaborative aspect. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be kind of like a template where there's not that many possibilities. And, you know, kind of like what you were saying, it's okay, but it's really not going to be as good. I think it's, yeah, best to have a working relationship with someone. I mean, like, you know, for instance, for me, like when it came time to do the mastering for my EP last year, I sat down with my mentor, actually, Craig Parker Adams, who I had done like I was his assistant for many years on different projects. We sat down and we just went through everything and, you know, and I don't know, I think that's best, you know, if either do it yourself or do it with somebody and where you can have like creative control because, yeah, I mean, just kind of to echo, it's your vision, it's your ear, and you kind of have to like trust that, you know, as long as it's feeling good, nothing's, you know, it's sounding good and it's feeling good and it's a quality that is professional. I mean, I think that's, you don't really need that kind of gimmicky algorithm stuff.
No, I would agree on that. I think I had a beta version of one platform. I won't disclose which one, but I use it as a tool just if I want to do a quick master for referencing purposes or I want to send it to someone to check out. But I think I would always go with a set of ears over a template, as you say. So the I think going back to what George's original question was it novice producers be wary of, wasn't it, George?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whether it be like a plugin or like a course or something like that.
Yeah, I think there are so many things. I don't know about you. As soon as you start shopping online and I see, as you say there about adverts, and I see so many adverts selling me the next silver bullet to make a hit record. And I see a lot of those, or a silver bullet to come up with a chord progression, like hit A on the MIDI keyboard and it will come up. I mean, if you're stuck for ideas, it's great. Don't get me wrong. But I think, as you say, there are so many things that you have to sort of sift through, and also information as well. Like there's so much information out there, specifically if you scroll through Instagram, there's loads and loads of videos and stuff. And I'm guilty of doing it myself, to be fair, so I can't really knock anybody else for putting information out there, but for me personally, I think it's things like that. It's being wary of like the silver bullet as an artist, and you can easily spend a load of cash, I think, thinking that this is going to be incredible for you, but Yeah, that's my thought.
The chords thing's funny that you touched on that. There's one advert in particular that I laugh at quite a lot because it's like, you know what you need? You don't need simple chords. You need pro-level chords. And I'm like, what's a pro-level chord?
Yeah. that's exactly it. Look at AC/DC. I mean, they status quo. They made a career out of like three chords, for Christ's sake. Yeah. I mean, how would you define a pro-level chord?
Yeah, none of them got it. It was just add a 9 and it's a pro level chord.
Yeah.
Simple. And they all missed it. And they would have done so much better if AC/DC had not been A, D, and E, but A9, D9, and E9. Of course, they would have been a better band, obviously. He says, not being serious.
I'd love for somebody to go through their back catalogue and do that. Just go through the AC/DC back catalogue and add, like,
yeah, just add sus twos,
some augmented notes.
Yeah, no. It's just
so good.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous thing, isn't it? What's a pro level chord? Yeah.
D Did it say what a pro-level chord was?
It sadly didn't give an example of it, but it was like the reason your music is, you know, it's not sounding good enough. It's not getting into playlists because you don't use pro-level chords.
I often find I see those, and usually it's a case of like, and they just say, just move the chord up an octave, and then it suddenly becomes a pro-level chord. I've seen that a few times, moving up an octave. To be fair, I do
Although
that
it's great to move your triad and find that there are different inversions. That's a wonderful thing, isn't it? The inversion of a chord is something that some people miss out their entire musical career, and you're going like, okay. Would have been really interesting had you discovered that it doesn't have to start on the root note, but there we go. Yeah. It's what I mean is simple changes.
Oh, just, yeah, changing up the voicings, inverting chord. I mean, yeah, it doesn't have to be something crazy complicated to be good, but I mean, switching the note order. I mean, it changes the vibe.
I think chords are massively important. I interviewed Ed Sunglasses Kid a few weeks ago, and he said that. He said whenever he starts out a track, he gets the chords down, and he'll flesh the whole thing out with chords, and he'll put down, like, basic kit over it. Doesn't get hung up on what the kit sounds like because he's going to go and replace it at a later date, but he just fleshes the chords out, or bass, sometimes a bass line, because we had the exact same discussion. And he said about chords, he's like, the chords can make or break it, like, in terms of the chord progression. And a lot of the time he gets asked for feedback on mixes and mastering or mixes, and he says a lot of the time it's nothing to do with the mix, it's to do with the chord progression in terms of, like, where they're going to take the song. So that's, I think that's key, chords. I know it's a slight deviation from the original point, but
yeah, I mean, it comes through really strongly in Ed's stuff. Like, Sunglasses Kid, for me, when I listen to it, I'm basically listening just to hear what chord progression he's going to do next. It's just amazing. It's so emotive and mystical, and, like, there's so much depth to it. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff to listen to.
You'll love that episode because he is a wealth of information. I basically just sat back like that and just listened to him, and every now and again I just chimed in with a question. But no, he's brilliant. One thing I did take away, this is a tangent again, I think actually this is good for novice producers and new producers, is presets. In terms of, he said he uses presets all the time. He's just like, well, why reinvent the wheel? I know it's sound design is great and I do it as well, but I think that's another thing. Don't be afraid to just, like, if you've got a preset bank, explore it and see what's in there and use it. Whereas I know that can be a bit of a contentious thing. I put a post out recently where I said it's okay to use presets and or loops, and somebody disagreed with me in one shape or form. But yeah, I think that's another one.
It's another one that's like, you know, like you were saying with preset banks and things, it's very easy to think like, oh, if I sort of, you know, bought a better plugin that doesn't come with my DAW or something, that will make the sounds automatically better, when actually, I mean, it's quite possible that you could produce a fantastic track with the sounds in your DAW without ever buying an additional plugin. Yes, I have lots of additional plugins. I love plugins, but, like, you know, and I do have a voracious appetite for just trying new things. But, like, you know, you don't, it's weird. I did a mix for someone the other day, and I was trying to do a mix within my DAW with just the plugins that come, the stock plugins that come with it, so I could send it to them, they could open it in theirs, and then they could listen to what I'd done. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have used the plugins. I've got other plugins that I tend to use a lot, but I suddenly sort of discovered how much I could do pretty much everything that I would normally do with just what was in my DAW anyway. So I was like, yeah, actually, it doesn't really sound that much different than all the other expensive plugins that I just spent ages buying. Yeah, and I think it's so much about learning about, you know, you've got a compressor, how do you use that compressor, you know, what's different than the vintage one to the standard one or whatever they call it in your DAW, you know, and just, you know, it's very easy to think, if I had this, I mean, it's pretty much what you were saying, Mark, but, like, it's like, you know, if I had this, then my track would be good, or it's probably the bare bones of your track is the important thing, like the you know, the lyrics, the vocal, the you know, the vibe, the groove, the chord progression, the bare bones of your track, the sound, you know, the way you're putting different sounds together. I mean, that's another bugbear of mine, is why people think that, although there are people who can make multiple lines work all simultaneously, most people can't. That would be my one thing. It's like, how many elements does your track actually need at any one time to be really good? Because so many of the things that really get to me is when somebody goes like, I've got like 10 elements all going on doing something melodic or something, and I'd be going like, yeah, it sounds like garbage, mate. I really don't know why you think that, you know. And that's just to me, but like so many records that are great don't do that. Why? Because most of us can't, I mean, Frank Zappa might be an exception, but like, you know, why can't you sort of like, can you can't cope with listening to all of these things and keep attention on them all the time? So often, if you're doing too much, you are going to confuse people, you are going to lose people. So maybe pare it back and try and work out what elements you need to make it work. So less is more.
Yeah, and just really dialing in those particular elements is more important than having a bunch of different things happening.
Yeah, rather than having loads of expensive plugins or different things, whatever, dialing in those elements, yeah.
Definitely. I was about to the original question, my only tip was to use free plugins first. Don't buy expensive things straight away thinking that it'll guarantee you a top track. What you're trying to do in the beginning is become your own producer, right? Become your own songwriter anyway. So use tools that are free so that you can, like in a pressure-free environment, just create. What was the last part that you said?
I think it was less is more, isn't it? I think with
yes,
regards
yes,
to the
yes.
track.
Yeah. I was thinking in the dance world, we say kill your darlings. The things that you like, but that are unnecessary or over the top. Like to always check your track and remove if it doesn't actually. If you can remove it and the track doesn't feel like less of the song, then remove it. You don't want unnecessary elements in there. And a way to just a little bit of a side note, but how I try to catch what I actually want the track to focus on if I've got too many elements is when I present it to someone else and they kind of sing along to it, if they're not singing along to what I'm thinking of in my head, if I'm thinking of the bass line, but they're singing along to some chord progression that I've added on top, I'm like, oh shit, no, I should take away the keys that I have on top of my bass line in this particular part, because obviously what I want the listener to listen to right now is the bass line that I'm humming. So just noticing what you yourself listen to in your own track and then prioritizing that to build a dynamic if you have a lot of different elements going on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
That is. Absolutely. And I do something similar, but I never thought of doing it that way, which is I'd play it to my girlfriend, and if she hums the melody later, then I know it works. But I love the idea that if she, I'll look out for that now. If she doesn't hum the main melody, she hums something totally different, then I'll know that something's gone slightly awry. But it also echoes. I had this conversation with an artist earlier today. Again, we were discussing how, like, if you a key bit of information he was given was much that it was just like less is more, and that some of the top artists will say that. And if you look at the records they produce or release, they are simple in comparison to a lot of, like what Tim was saying there about having 10 different things going off at the same time, which I've been guilty of. And one of the things I now do before I mix is what you said, Thorto, which is I'll go through, I'll mute everything and I'll add it. And then if it doesn't add anything, I just can it and I'll go through the whole thing and get rid of it. Because I've released one track and I listen to it and I'm like, oh man, it sounds so muddy in places because I've got too much shit going on. I got my fingers burnt a bit. So, yeah, I totally agree with that one there. I think, folks, we're almost at an hour now. And I've realised Tim's put on the fancy lights in the background there if you're watching this on YouTube. So, very, very good. So what we'll do is I'm going to put all your information in the episode notes, as I always do. But if we just go around and then just if you just want to shout out where the audience can find you online, and maybe just like... I should have set. Maybe I'll do this next time. Like elevator pitches, that'd be quite cool. But like a brief description of your music, brief description of your music, and then a short, then your sort of tags online. So I'll go around. I'll snake around. So Tim, R9, do you want to go first?
Okay, yeah. I guess my music is sort of synthwave bass, but like, you know, synth pop, retro pop, various other things come into it. You know, some of my music is vocal and some of my music is instrumental. It's all a little bit, I guess I'd like to think it's all got a little bit of a quirk to it. You know, it's not too sort of by numbers. You can find me on, you know, all the streaming channels, Spotify and whatever, and Apple Music. You can also find me on Instagram a lot on at R9 Music, and you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, all the other social media things, normally at R9 Music, sometimes at R9 Synthwave on Twitter, I believe. But, like, yeah, and YouTube. I'm around.
I'm around. Yes, go check out his YouTube, actually, because I think the walkthrough you did of your track was great. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
20-minute walkthrough.
It wasn't as good as the tea commercial. Yeah,
you should have done that as like a prelim to the release of it. The tea. Yeah. Although what I realised with YouTube is you just, I don't know, I just get a lot of thumbs down for the stuff I put up, which I quite like, to be fair, in a weird sort of way. There you go, Neon Highway. We'll go around to yourself next.
I guess I produce what I would say is synth music, not strictly synth wave, but it is rooted, I guess, in synth wave. Sort of exploring ambient electronica and kind of more darker sounds at times as well, which I'm a big fan of. Easiest way to find me is at Neon Highway Synth on Instagram. The music's streaming on all sort of usual platforms, as well as Bandcamp, SoundCloud, etc.
Lovely stuff. Lovely. We'll go down again. So, Tota?
Yeah. So, for the music itself, it's vapor wavy, synth wavy, retro 80s, nostalgic. But I truly am not afraid to take any influence. So, they sometimes go off the rails if you're looking for purely synthwave music, but I think you should give it a try. You can find the music on any streaming services, as with everyone, Spotify, Apple Music and such, and the socials, I guess my Instagram is most active, so at Tota's Voice on Instagram, and you'll see little sneak peeks and videos of stuff I do.
Marvelous, lovely stuff. Right, Carmen Noodles.
If you like beats, guitar and synth, then maybe you'll like my music. I don't know. You can find it on Spotify, Instagram at Carmen Noodles. I guess technically the genre would be lo-fi, but there's a lot of synth in there. So if you're a synthwave lover, a synthwavian, as I've heard many times on this podcast, then maybe you'll like it.
Are you still in the Netherlands? You're still in the Netherlands, right?
I am.
Yeah.
From Rijswijk in the Netherlands.
Rijswijk. How far is that from Amsterdam? I judge everything by distance from there.
I actually went to a jam session yesterday in Amsterdam, and it took about an hour and a half door to door. Yeah.
Are you from the Netherlands originally or not?
I've lived here a long time, but I'm originally from my family are from Manchester. So
I did think that was a. An accent that probably hadn't originated in the Netherlands. Yeah,
it's just outside of Amsterdam. Everyone sounds like this.
Oh, right, okay, that's good.
And Ghost Georgie.
It's not so much synthwave as it is dream pop and synth pop. You know, a lot of synths, but as far as really sticking to that genre, you know, I don't. It's very vocal. As I mentioned earlier, you know, soundscapes and you know, vibey. So it's not super 80s. Sometimes it kind of overlaps, you know, but if you like, chill pop, synth pop, singer songwriter kind of stuff, you'll dig it. I'm on, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. I'm also most active on Instagram. And it's all at Ghost Georgie. But I'm on Twitter as well, and my website is just ghostgeorgie.com if you want to, you know, find me.
Fantastic. Folks, I'll put all that in the episode notes.
Thank you for listening to our show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate our show on Apple Podcasts. Whoa! Before you go, make sure to snag your free test master from Synth Music Mastering. Imagine enhancing your music with my steadfast dedication to quality and that personalized touch. And here's the kicker, it's absolutely free, no cost at all. Simply head over to synthmusicmastering.com or click the link in the episode description to claim your free test master.